Football Weekly Extra with James Richardson, in association with SportingBet.com.
Like a rabbit in your headlights, with a special live and in video roundup of all the latest from Planet Football, including Bong, Liverpool not saved by Private Ryan, now with us for Rafa. Bong, the latest news from around Europe. Bong, your posts and tweets. Bong, I look forward to the weekend in the Premier League, including hello Chelsea groundsman Patrice Evra and United return to Stamford Bridge. And Bong, the naming controversy that's shocking football. No, not Kai Rooney, but Mike Ashley's decision to rename St James's Park Sports Direct at St James's Park. Is it the worst attempt at a title since Liverpool's last one? All of that coming up in today's extra special Full Story and Picks Football Weekly Extra. And here we are then, Football Weekly live and in video, just like real TV, in fact, except I'm presenting it. And with me on the panel, we have Raphael Honigstein.
Hi, James.
You're off out afterwards, are you, Rafa?
What?
Yeah, you off? You can't hear me, can you?
No.
No, okay.
Say again?
Are you out tonight, Rafa?
We'll see. We'll see how the evening goes.
Lovely. Okay, Barry, Glenn Denny, thanks for joining us for this groundbreaking thing.
You're very welcome. It's good to be here because we're coming in people's faces tonight as well as their ears, and it's right. All live. I thought I'd bring this little swear box, so just in case, because I thought Sean Ingle might be here. But
Sean was going to be here.
But he's not.
Instead, we have Paolo Bandini, who's staying up late for the occasion. Paolo.
Yeah, just for tonight. I called my mum and she said it was okay.
You're joking. But no, lovely to have you on board, because there's a lot to talk about vis-a-vis Serie A and those crazy Italians. We're looking forward to your contribution. Very interactive show tonight, listeners and indeed viewers. We welcome your tweets and your posts. I'm going to get them on this little laptop, we call it, here in front of me. You can contact us on tweet using the FW Live hashtag, apparently. There you go. Let us know your thoughts on the Champions League games, which is going on at the moment, although don't turn over or anything. And with it being November the 5th, we'd also like to hear your firework-themed footballers. There's some fun in that, and there have been some pretty good ones already. Wooderson says, can we expect a barrage of firework puns? I just hope nobody forks it up. Rhinocero comes up with a footballer named Rocket Santa Cruz. Not singing anymore, Brian Gunpowder Plot. I like that. And here's a particularly nice one from the production team behind the glass. You can't see them, unfortunately, or perhaps best. Danny Stand Welbeck.
I don't care.
Stand
that.
Welbeck.
Ah,
yes.
Very good.
Excellent. Now, if the Champions League group stages had ended last night, Bayern Munich, Liverpool, and Barcelona would all be out. Would all be in the Europa League. How extraordinary is that?
Hooray for the Champions League. I love the Champions League, and I feel vindicated after getting a bit of stick throughout the years, I think, from the likes of Barry, who thinks it's all a pre-gone conclusion and that it should go straight into knockout because it would be much more exciting. It's a really good season and a really good year for upsets. And as you said, there's a lot of big teams really struggling. Of course, none bigger than perhaps Bayern Munich.
Well, I was going to say that, but Liverpool is what I wanted to go with. Yeah. So can we say that Liverpool, none bigger than Liverpool? None bigger than Liverpool, right? seriously, because Bayern Munich, at least there's a solid structure behind them. You know more or less what they're doing. Or at least
they don't know what
do.
They're doing, unfortunately, you don't think so? On the pitch. No, I mean, look, they're for the fourth richest club. They have no debt. They are huge in terms of the money at their disposal, but they're really underachieving. They now have become a really average side in Europe, and it's an indictment, really, because you might say that off the pitch they're being tremendously well managed, but you can't get it onto the pitch in terms of quality. So what's the use of having all this wonderful money in the bank?
All right, how possibly am I going to segue from that to Liverpool? Can't think of any parallels at all. A tubby manager who keeps rotating too much. But anyway, Liverpool, serious issues there. I mean, we were talking the other day about how we'd seen, indeed they were published, the proposals to the banks when they were trying to secure more loans, about how they were relying on the income from the Champions League. It's very, very possible now that Liverpool won't be in the competition in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah, I mean, I think it has to be said that the whole comment of if the Champions League groups ended today is slightly skewed by the fact that, of course, the team you play third is also the team you've played fourth, and probably the toughest team in Liverpool's group is Lyon. So they've had two games back-to-back against Lyon. Now, they should have come away from those games with more points than they did, but, you know, at the same time, I'm still not sure it's quite over for them. I know a lot of people are certain it is, but I just think Lyon, who are going to want to win the group, could easily beat Fiorentina, and then it is back in Liverpool's hands for, you know, the big night at Anfield. Can they beat Fiorentina? Can they, even if Fiorentina draw, you know, a win by more than two goals? I mean, there's just something about it that says to me it's not quite dead yet.
I think it is dead, but I'm still not convinced Leon are a very good side. The Liverpool weren't, they weren't that impressive at Anfield. They weren't very impressive last night either. Liverpool should have beaten them last night, failed to do so. And I think it is over for them. I think Fiorentina are actually a better side than Lyon.
This just in on the Fiorentina front. Adrian Mutu, of course, a big, big player for them, is likely to be out for another month, which will certainly cover that Lyon visit, because of a torn meniscus.
Yeah, and while everyone was, you know, worried about Torres over here in Italy, they were sort of patting Mutu on the back last night for coming on and playing when he had a gammy knee, and he had a good game, scored the first goal, and, you know, was integral throughout. And then, of course, he's out for the next month. So whether or not they've done themselves any favours.
Mm. Stevie Scally,
He
put himself on the line for that big win over Debrecen.
Oh, I see what you're doing there. Very nice. Yeah. We're live, so you can get away with stuff like that. Stevie Scally posting it, saying, after watching Liverpool for over 40 years, I can honestly say the second half performance at Craven Cottage last Saturday was the worst display ever I've seen in men in Liverpool shirts, blah, blah, blah. If we go out of the Champions League, only a fire sale in January will rescue the club financially. The comparisons with a Leeds scenario are not wide of the mark.
Well, I think it's a little bit wide off the mark in the sense that getting into the last 16 is not the be and end all of your finances, because while you would make another £10 million or so, I think the real problem is not getting into the Champions League next year. And that's why I think Rafa's job is safe, even if he were to crash out. But if they start losing more games in the league and there's a situation where they could seriously lose out on fourth spot, I think then they might be forced to pull the plug on him, just the way that Chelsea did on Scolari, because that's when it really matters, when you're not getting into the Champions League for next season.
The viewers enjoying our video servers have just had a picture of Torres and Vinny. It's lovely. Let's see what bizarre things we can mention, see if they can match them with pictures. Barry?
I don't think there's the slightest danger of Liverpool dropping out of the top four now, because it occurred to me when I saw the result last night that West Ham had beaten Villa, and then you have Man City drawing game after game after game in the Premier League. Who is going to replace them? I know City and Spurs are both ahead of them in the table at the moment, but I can't see that lasting, because I don't think Spurs and City are strong enough.
None of those teams have a worse record than one win in the last eight, which is what Liverpool have, and they'll have to try and improve that against home to Birmingham City on the weekend, which presumably they'd have to figure is within their means. It's all part of the perils, I guess, of being taken over by rich Americans, which brings us on to Arsenal, Paolo Bandini.
Yeah, it certainly does. Stan Kroenke today, I think actually mercifully finally got himself up to 29.9%.
Was he there now?
Yeah, because the good thing about that is that he now cannot increase any further without launching a takeover bid. So I think over the last 2 weeks we've had about 12 different reports on the site of Stan Kroenke buys 6 more shares. So,
Hatton Bomb complaining about it. He's like a frigging dripping tap. Why didn't he make his move before we all go mad?
Yeah, and it's interesting. I mean, you know, there were an Arsenal fans group went over and saw him a little while ago to ask him what his intentions were, and came back satisfied that he wasn't going to try and buy the club. But then, of course, you know, at the AGM he wouldn't say anything. And it is worth noting there that you're not allowed to say anything at all ambiguous in a public statement if you have an intention of buying a team in the next 6 months. Otherwise, you're banned from buying them. So I think there's a serious possibility that he's lining it up now.
Well, it just looked that way, doesn't it? What about the team on the field? Absolutely amazing performance against AZ Alkmaar.
Yeah, I mean, I think probably no one was surprised to see Arsenal win and win comfortably. But, you know, it's reassuring for Arsenal. Yeah, they had a relatively easy group, you would say, and they've dealt with it not quite as quickly as was absolutely possible, but pretty quickly. And, you know, although they're not technically through, they're effectively through, and now they can look to wrap up the group in the finish top in the next two games.
Mancien wants to know, please can you tell me who Cesc was tending to F off when he scored his first? Did seem a bit riled about something.
Yeah, I tried to find out today, but I so far have no idea. I'm afraid he did look riled off the first goal, and I was just as intrigued, but I don't know.
Suggestions of Nasri, but I'm not sure if is there any ill feeling there or friction.
Not that I'm aware.
All right then, well, you'd know about it. So,
and it's certainly not as if anyone of us would ever tell any of the others to F off.
Absolutely not.
Before, during or after a podcast.
Exactly. Jimbo's chocolate leg. Oh, hello. Barry's... Is that something really rude?
Probably, I think so.
Shame on you. Barry's favourite football writer, Eamon Dunphy, said on RTE last night that Arsenal are better than Barcelona this year. Given recent results, what do people think about that? Arsenal for the Champions League?
Very possible. I don't think they're far away. The key for them will be to not to lose any players. I'm still not quite convinced that the squad is deep enough to maintain a challenge, and perhaps going well in the Premier League might come back to to haunt them a little bit when it comes to the latter stages.
Right.
They tend to fall apart a little bit when the games come thick and fast, as they did towards the end of last season, where they had a good run before. But I think in terms of potential and the way they're playing, I think they're probably the best team in Europe right now.
Wow, I think the squad depth thing is certainly interesting in that, you know, before the Tottenham game, obviously Robbie Keane came out and said, you know, we think our squad's deeper than yours now, which was foolish. But basically, I think given that both teams had a lot of injuries, what you saw there is that actually Arsenal can now withstand quite a lot of injuries up front. What they can't withstand, I don't think, is injuries at the back. I think if Vermaelen or Gallas
injuries
goes out,
to the back. Clichy's got a stress fracture of the back, and he's not the only one. Danielson, I think, had a similar thing. Worrying thoughts arise about the training methods there.
I think that's probably a little bit soon to say that. But
All right.
I'd like to stress for the record that Eamon Dunphy is not my favourite football writer. Right. I would rather read the scribblings of a monkey with a pencil.
Right. They've got them just there. So, okay, Man United. Meantime, some good news and bad news for them. They got the come-from-behind win. The bad news is that their backup players, especially at the back, don't seem to be doing so well. They may have to use them again this weekend. At least they're not facing the most dangerous striker in Europe or anything like that. Rafa. Didier Drogba.
Yeah, looking very good. And Nicolas Anelka. Yeah. Fantastic double act. And, I mean, United, I think you can't really judge them on a Champions League performance. It was basically a B team. And they were very lucky to get away with a 3-3 draw. They could have very easily lost that game at home to CSK Moscow. It's going to be a different game. And for me, the interesting thing will be how flexible is Ferguson in his tactics, you know, because he's been
playing... With the Chelsea game.
Yes, he's been playing a 4-4-2 more or less throughout the season. A 4-4-2 really didn't work at all when they're playing Barcelona in the Champions League final. One of the reasons for me that they were so outplayed was because they didn't have that extra man. Traditionally, at least in the Queiroz years, he used to put another midfielder in there when they're playing the likes of Chelsea. Now, will he go to that back to that formation or not? You do feel that with the strength and power that Chelsea have and the numerical advantage as well of having essentially four holding midfielders or four central midfielders, that it could well overpower them on Sunday.
Mm. United have only won once in the last 10 years at Stamford Bridge, and that was 7 years ago. Paolo, are you optimistic about their chances?
I think that this is as good a chance as any.
Really?
Yeah, why not?
You don't think Chelsea are looking strong?
No, I think Chelsea have looked strong sort of intermittently. I mean, I think, you know, certainly in midweek they didn't look at all invincible, and I think they've had sort of up games and down games, and I think that, you know, I really think this is a year when no one has imposed themselves on the title race and set out like a team that's going to dominate it. So I think that there's, you know, while there are obvious problems that you can pick out with United, I don't see why they shouldn't be able to win at Stamford Bridge.
Right. Barry?
I think Manchester United will lose, and possibly quite heavily.
Right, OK. That would put them 5 points behind Chelsea, of course, which would be a bit of a blow. What's this business about Akinfeev going to Old Trafford? Any news on that? The Cesca goalkeeper?
Well, he's one of the 2-3 goalkeepers who are forever being linked with United. Of course, there's a couple of Germans as well. Manuel Neuer, perhaps even René Adler of Leverkusen. There is no great secret, I think, in Europe and in sort of agent circles, a nice place to be, that they are very much in the market for a new goalkeeper. But I'm not sure Akinfeev is really the answer. I think he's good, but I'm not quite sure he's that good.
Raphael, we mentioned it there, Louis van Gaal. One or two problems with Bayern. I know you touched on this at the start. There's no chances of him being fired, though, you tell me.
There is always a chance of being fired when you're a Bayern Munich manager. It happens to the best and worst of them. They've got some really tough games coming up before they were back in action in the Champions League, so he could well lose his job over domestic results. But in the Champions League, they're a similar situation as Liverpool. It's out of their hands. If Juventus win the next game at Bordeaux, then whatever happens, Bayern are out. So they're just clutching at straws at the moment. And it's really the man of the defeat on Tuesday night that shocked people, because Bayern were really, really awful. I can't say that Bordeaux were terribly impressive. They defended for 90 minutes. I think they had 1.5 chances and scored 2 goals. One from a freaky free kick and one from a desperate punt up front in the last minute. But there are some really serious problems going on at Bayern, and I think the biggest problem is not so much Van Gaal and his tactics or whatever. You can talk about his selection, his rotation policy, but I think the squad is just not good enough. And over the last few years, Bayern, with all their money, haven't really invested properly. Mm. And some people are saying they're turning into the Real Madrid of Germany, spending all this money but never really getting the right team on the pitch. And I think that's a very valid accusation.
Stuttgart and Wolfsburg, any better for them?
Well, Stuttgart have still a theoretical chance. They can win the next two games, then they're through. So it's still within their own control, as it were. They've got a couple of games coming up. And there was a good chance of beating Seville. They were down to nine men because Dusha, David Beckham's mate, was brought in and then had to come off with an injury with 15 minutes to go, and they did equalise but didn't win. They should have, perhaps. And Wolfsburg, though, are very good. They are all but through. They need a point from the last two games, so at least I think there's going to be one German team which just spares our blushes a little bit.
All right, because we're keeping a close eye on your UEFA coefficient. Your famous German coefficiency doesn't seem to be working out this time, because Italy are actually stretching ahead, aren't they, Paolo? Yeah. After another fine week for the Italian team.
Yeah, it was Gazzetta actually sort of wrote right before the round of games on Tuesday, said basically we'd be happy if Milan drew and the rest won, and that's exactly how it panned out eventually. I think Milan, despite, you know, them having a goal chalked off, will have been quite happy to draw with Real Madrid at home. You know, that means they've got the tiebreaker there, and they've got a tricky game still to come against Marseille, but they should get through that group. I would never make anything definitive with them.
They could still stuff it up, though.
Yeah, exactly. If any team
at home to FC Zurich. Yeah. So.
If any team is going to put in a couple of solid performances against the best team in their group and then find a way to contrive to not get through it to Milan. But the really big one was Inter finally winning in Europe after a year. 1-0 down against Kiev with... I can't remember exactly how many minutes, but four minutes left on the clock.
To go, yeah.
And Mourinho's at this point thrown on every attacker he has. He's got two defenders, I think, left on the pitch. And they finally got it. And actually, you know, in the end, they very much deserved to get it. I mean...
Two goals in 4 minutes to finish the game.
Yeah, I mean, it was left very, very late, but Kiev is...
But they've been trying all the way through the second half, haven't they? They've been peppering the Kiev goal.
Kiev as an attacking force, I think, really lasted up until Shevchenko got that goal. And after that, they sat back deeper and deeper and deeper, and they invited onto them. And I think the big thing for Inter is I still don't know if they would have got that result were it not for the two players who got the goals, which is Schneider and Milito, who have both been so important. If you look at the signings that have come over, and I know that people might look at Ibrahimovic and him missing that chance against Ruben Kazan for Barcelona and say, oh, you know, big game bottle. Actually, Eto really hasn't had the impact everyone expected at Inter so far. He's scored about, I think it's four or five goals in the league, but a couple of them have come from penalties, and he's been a sort of up and down. But Milito has scored, I think, seven goals in nine league games, and he's been injured a little bit. This is only his second game up front in the Champions League, and he scored.
Next up for Inter in Serie A this weekend, they're taking on Roma, the mighty conquerors of the Costas this evening. 2-1, the final score there at the Stadio Olimpico. Very exciting stuff. Now, we mentioned a little bit Fiorentina and the fact that they hold Liverpool's chances in their hands. If they can beat Lyon, that brings Liverpool back into the mix. Fiorentina, though, they do seem to be transformed from the team we saw in the Champions League last year.
I'm not saying they aren't. I think it's still very much up in the air for me. I think Fiorentina have done the business against Debrecen, which you expect them to do, and they had a really good game against Liverpool. But again, in the league, their performances are up and down, and so they have to now go and show they can get a result against either Lyon or Liverpool. Now, so they've got two shots at it, but they've got to prove that they can do that.
All right, now Bruno Londinese posted in during the week saying, well, how come you people didn't manage to mention the big result of last weekend in Serie A, which was, of course, Napoli's amazing comeback away to Juventus, where they hadn't won for 21 years. Just a quick shout out then to the brave boys down from the Bay of Naples.
Yeah, Walter Mazzarri's done an absolutely fantastic job since he took over there. I mean, he's just... It's interesting, like everyone, well, not everyone, but there have been some people who when Pierpaolo Marino, who's the sporting director, left, some people said, hey, he brought in Lavezzi, he brought in...
You did, didn't you, Bill?
No, I didn't. That was a poster said that, and I believe I wasn't in the podcast he was in because I listened to it. But he brought in all his players, and he also brought in a lot of duds as well. He did bring in some great players, but more of a concern for Napoli was that he was a really overbearing presence at the club.
He brought in Jesus Datolo, though, and Jesus Datolo turned around the game in Turin.
Absolutely. I mean, he's brought in some good players, but he signed 70 players, I think, Odd, and he's sold one. something like that. They've had to release a ton of players. But the issue is just more that he was a really overbearing presence at Napoli. And yes, Donadoni wasn't a good manager, really. And I think that was important to replace him. But what a lot of the stuff that's come out since in Naples is that actually suddenly everyone's just kind of happy that he's gone and they can get on with playing football. And, right. and he used to fine them for the most petty things. And that's, the first thing Mazzarri did when he came in was say, no more fines. So
did he have a swear box?
He may well have had a swear box.
He probably did. Anyway, well done to Napoli. Lovely to see them back up there. Not since the days of Maradona and Correa and all that, as we say.
Very quick, there was one other reader postal just before I come in, which was someone saying, why did none of the English clubs come in for Schneider? Because now obviously he's been so important for Inter. And I think, I couldn't give you an exact reason why every club didn't come in for him, but I would say that I think actually Schneider really tried not to leave Real Madrid this summer. He kept saying he wanted to stay. And it was basically only Inter that showed the persistence right up to the end and said, we're still here, we're still trying to sign you. And when he was sort of being forced out the door, they were the ones waiting.
Excellent stuff. Well, there you go. Many thanks for that. More to come as we look forward to the weekend in the Premier League. Right now, though, time to get the latest from Spain. Sid!
Hello.
Hello, Sid. There you are in... Hey, stop. No. Yes. Sid, how are you?
I'm all right, thanks. How are you?
Excellent. Yeah, we were very well here, as you can probably see, live on your stream and that. Listen,
As if my stream would ever be that quick.
No. Now, listen, I want to talk to you about lots of things this week. We've got... Barcelona in trouble, eh? European champions. What's happened to them?
It's a good question, that. What has happened to them? They look a little bit slow. They look a little bit sluggish. And what's really happened, obviously, is that they've been beaten... Well, not beaten. They've been beaten once by Kazan and drawn once with Kazan, taken 4 points off them in the Champions League. It's come as a real shock. I think on both occasions, Barcelona could probably claim to have been pretty unlucky. But there is a fear there, because, again, we're seeing that teams that are extremely defensive against Barcelona are being able to grind out results against them, certainly in the Champions League, at least.
If the group stage was to end now, they'd be in the Europa League, Sid.
Yes, they would be, but the group stage doesn't end now. And, of course, that's what they're clinging to. The headline on the front of Diario Sports, which is one of the two Catalan daily today, said, winning the next two games, qualified, which, of course, is true. But then what about drawing one of them? Well, that could well leave Barcelona in big trouble.
Yeah. El Mundo Deportivo, I noticed when I was knocking together the European papers review earlier, had Russian roulette for their 0-0 draw there with Ruben Kazan. Well, while they're having one or two problems, Barry...
Well, I just wanted to know, Sid, how big of a shock do you think it is that they've, a draw away to the Russian champions isn't that bad, is it?
Well, that's what they're saying as well. They're saying that you have to bear in mind that we have a group, certainly from Barcelona's point of view anyway, we have a group in which all four teams are champions of their league. So in that sense, it's a very tough group. It's also a tough group in the sense that both of Barcelona's trips away to Kazan have come in the middle of the winter. So it was very, very cold yesterday. And the picture, though, I actually thought it looked okay on the television, apparently wasn't in great shape. So perhaps that's a mitigating factor. The key really is that Barcelona were beaten by Kazan at home. That's where the real problem comes. But of course, that was kind of a bit of a freak result as well, in that Ruben Kazan were a goal up after a couple of minutes from a shot that came out of absolutely nowhere, and then got another one on the break with Barcelona peppering their goal all game long. In the first half yesterday, Barcelona had 78% of the possession. But the problem is that all of this suggests that there are times just a little bit blunt. They don't have the sharp cutting edge that they had last season. And that thing that we're all saying that would help Barcelona this year, which is the introduction of Ibrahimovic, which gives them a different option, that's not quite working just yet, in the Champions League at least, because he's been brilliant in La Liga.
Meanwhile, Real Madrid, now I did briefly mention them in the paper review and talking about the fact that the first half, certainly against Milan at the San Siro, was regarded as probably their best performance this year.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. I thought they were very, very good for the first half an hour or so. Then they seemed to... I wouldn't go so far as to say they bottled it, but they seemed to be shocked a little bit, I think, about the fact that AC Milan got back into the game with that penalty. Then they were very fortunate that AC Milan had a goal scored by Pato ruled out for no reason whatsoever, as far as I can see, anyway. And that kind of rocked them. In the second half, they were nowhere near as good, and Seedorf in particular really kind of grew into the game and really started to get hold of the ball a little bit, and Madrid looked nowhere near as confident. But it is true that they did things they haven't done all season. They had pace up front, the absence of Raul and the inclusion of Benzema and Higuain gave them much more edge, much more mobility. But by the end, the mobility was a strange... It was almost kind of a double-edged sword against them. They had so much mobility in the first half. In the second half, they did again, but they had players in the wrong places. You had Marcelo ending up through the middle, Kaká on the left-hand side when he'd been so effective through the middle. So I do think there are things that Madrid still need to get right. But certainly considering what happened last week with that defeat in the Copa del Rey against Alcorcón, that they see it as a very, very positive step in the right direction.
Pellegrini thus surviving that big crunch game. And another one coming up this weekend when they take on an Atletico Madrid side that's showing signs of life.
Yeah, but the thing is, of course, Atletico Madrid, from Real Madrid's point of view, are the gift that keeps on giving. Every time Real Madrid go to Atletico Madrid, even if they're in trouble and Atletico seem to be flying, Atletico just kind of lie down and die. Bear in mind, this is a side that went down in 2002, Atletico Madrid. That year, they beat Real Madrid, and they still went down. Since then, since they came back up, which was two seasons later, they haven't been able to beat Real Madrid once. And of course, everybody is saying, well, this year could be different, and Atletico is showing signs of life. Yes, they could respond, but the trouble is, it's a story we've heard lots of times before.
Sid, I'm getting the wind-up finger from, you know, our bank of producers here in Nearest Orbit, but I can't let you go without...
Are you sure it's the wind-up finger?
Yeah, very much.
It's not just the index finger, middle finger even, sorry.
Listen, we're short on time. We could just get with the... I wanted to ask you about something I know that's close to your heart. The Beckham Law, as it's been called, this financial measure introduced by the Spanish government to increase the number of non-Spanish professionals coming in, which has favoured, indirectly, Spanish clubs hiring foreign football players because they pay half the taxes of everybody else. Sid, is it now going out the window?
Yeah, that's certainly the plan. The PSG, the current government, have struck a deal with a couple of other parties to put an amendment into next year's budget law, so it would come into force in 2010, that gets rid of what became known as the Beckham Law. The idea was it was the reverse of a brain drain. You'd bring in highly paid foreign executives, and you'd make it attractive for them to come to Spain. So anyone over €600,000 a year would pay 23% tax. Maybe it's 24, there goes the dog. 24%.
Stairs enthusiastic about that proposal.
Just seen herself in the window, I think. So they would pay 24% tax rather than the normal 43% at that level,
right.
And that would obviously encourage them to come to Spain. Now, the thing that this is, the reason why this is so significant is because clubs in Spain, they always pay players in net, so it's going to be the clubs that have to pay for this. So in other words, Real Madrid, it currently costs them €9 million a year to pay Cristiano Ronaldo. It will now cost them €12 million a year. The league are talking about going on strike because they think this is out of order.
€100 million it'll cost them, the league president said. Yes.
How
yes,
is this
it will,
going to
but...
affect you, Sid, personally, your finances?
Unfortunately, I'd love this to affect me. I'd love to be able to say, I'm in that bracket where this will affect me. And frankly, as someone who is ideologically committed to taxation, I'd be delighted with it. Morally is one question. What it does to football, of course, is completely a different one.
Yeah, as is so often the case. Sid, thank you very much for that. And thank Astea for her input as well. We'll be speaking to you on Monday. Right, hi everybody, and Sid Lowe there, still not getting anything through the laptop. Apparently we need an internet, or was that? I don't know how that, but I've got one or two on this, some paper, good old-fashioned paper, eh? Here's Gavin Barber, love the mugging to camera, James, do you do that towards an imaginary camera when the pod isn't being vidcast? Of course I do.
Do you think anyone might have noticed your disappearing poppy there?
What disappearing poppy?
Your poppy disappeared while you were talking to Sid, and now it's suddenly miraculously reappeared.
Barry.
By the way, I got something done in your honour for today's pod.
Let's have a look.
You're going to like this.
Yep.
And now I'm just wondering if the £14... Yes, £14. Mrs. Baz, of her hard-earned money that Mrs. Baz had to spend on it, if she can put it through expenses, I don't know.
Oh, for sure.
Or maybe we could auction it on eBay. You could sign it.
Yeah, I'll do that.
And I'll just work up a big sweat in it first for added authenticity.
As you wish, Barry. Other posts. McPherson John says, wake up, Barry. Paolo looks like Dwight from the American version of The Office, says CJ Ambrose. Doesn't seem fair. Oye Bola reckons that it's not live, but it is Oye Bola. There you go. And Gaz77 suggests two guy forks for our, November the 5th thing. Frank Squibbery, Franklin Kirby, good stuff there. A post here, little letters. I hate to be northeast-centric, but I just want to reiterate what I posted on the blog. Is Mike Ashley the most devastatingly dumb person ever? This little letter's posting it. The stadium naming rights handed to his company in a PR disaster that's now surely put off any potential suitor for the placement next season. Is it the worst stadium name ever?
Well, what I think should happen is that when the rights become available next season, all Sunderland's fans should chip in together and buy them and call it Roker Park. Or, you know, Stadium of Light 2.0 or,
right.
you know, the
Well, they'll Geordie need a stadium
circus.
To go to, some of them, won't they?
Pardon?
They'll need a stadium to go to, some of them, won't they?
Yeah, that's true, all right.
There's some very disturbing tweets here, most of which are very rude to me. That's interesting. Carl Pilkington coming up in an awful lot of them. You were mentioning some entertaining stadium names, Rafa.
Well, I mean, the poor people of Nuremberg had to put up with the Easy Credit Stadium.
That's poor.
Which didn't change in the credit crunch. It's
nope.
still Easy Credit.
All right, then. Yeah. Good one on Eurosport's website the other day. It had some of the worst ones. And Wankdorf, of course, came in there. But probably best not get into all of that. Barry, the Sunderland fans thing. I mean, I touched on it just there. Any comment on that?
Yeah, well, there's a...
Just for thickies like me, what actually has happened there?
A controversy going on at the moment. Some Sunderland fans have been banned from the ground, had their season tickets revoked. And it dates back to something that happened on the 8th of August, and it's a long story. I'll try and give you the short version for once. On the second of two trainloads of Sunderland fans coming down from a friendly in Edinburgh that they played against Hearts, the train was diverted into Newcastle Central Station. And when it pulled in, the obviously animosity between Sunderland and Newcastle fans, Sunderland fans were held on the train for 20 minutes to half an hour after it pulled in. Then when they got off the train, there were two lines of police waiting to escort them. The Sunderland fans claimed that one of the lines of police pushed them against the other. And then the police, who were armed with dogs and batons, sort of got stuck into them. And the Sunderland fans claim that there was far too much, you know, excessive force using them. A couple of them were seriously injured, got head wounds. One of them, I believe, lost up to 7 pints of blood. And some of them were attacked by dogs. The police let their dogs bite them. So the police insist that none of this happened. The supporters insist it did. There was an inquiry by the Independent Police Complaints Commission, which obviously exonerated the police, as these things always do. And now there's going to be possible court appearances and whatnot. But while they're waiting for the investigation to happen, Sunderland have banned all the fans who were involved from
so
entering
Sunderland
the stadium.
So Sunderland themselves have banned them from the stadium?
Yeah. And so the Football Fans Federation has, or Federation of Football Fans has started a petition, and I think if you go to their website you can sign it, appealing to Sunderland in general and Niall Quinn, you know, chairman and general Mother Teresa of Calcutta in particular, to lift the ban, because these fans have been found guilty, you know, without a trial, basically.
All right. Okay, what's the website, quickly?
I don't know the name of it exactly, but it's Football Fans Federation.
All right, okay.
Federation of Football Fans, you'll find it there.
All right, then. Now, we've not got a lot left in terms of time for this part three. What's happening this weekend, then? You've got the FA Cup. Is it a pub team, you're saying? Poulton Rovers up against Norwich? Is that being unfair?
Well, it's pretty much a pub team. It's a village team near Bristol called Poulton Rovers. They're in Southern League Division 1, South and West, which is the 8th tier of English football. Their average gate is in the low hundreds, and they're playing Norwich City at home. So that's one particularly eye-catching tie.
Right. Here are some other eye-catching ties. Man City against Burnley, eh? Man City, four straight draws, Raphael Honigstein. Is that going to change against the team with the worst away record in the Premier League?
I think from a neutral's point of view, you'd like it to change, because City were the one team that everybody looked for to shake up the top a little bit. And I think the Premier League is crying out for some new blood amongst the top four, and by extension the British entrance of the Champions League. And that's why I think it really is important for them to start winning again. They started so well and people really had great hopes for them, unless they're from the other side of Manchester, of course. But, you know, they've since really fallen away, and the way they're playing at the moment is very reminiscent of last season, where they were totally underwhelming.
Yeah, indeed. So, Paolo Arsenal, who scored 32 goals in their last 10 games, that's awesome, are at Wolves. Do you see the run continuing?
You'd imagine they'd win there. Wolves have been, you know, pretty much exactly as you'd have expected them to be at the beginning of the season, and Arsenal are in a good vein of form. And, you know, there's always the risk of them taking the eye off the ball against their eye off the ball like they did against West Ham at the end, but I'd imagine they should get 3 points.
Yeah, okay. West Ham, meanwhile, we should mention, got a victory, their first victory since the opening day of the season last night against Aston Villa. A terrific goal from Ashley Young, but a 2-1 victory for West Ham, who do, though, lose another couple of players. Carlton Cole, one of them, with a hamstring injury, and they are at home to Everton, who are currently 5 minutes and 39 seconds, for all you doubters out there, into their Europa League clash with Benfica. Scoreline still a 0-0.
I think Emil Heskey was also injured there as well, which sort of might open the door for little Mickey Owen to get a foot in for England's friendly against Brazil.
Why, is it? Oh, for the Brazil game?
Yeah.
That's next Saturday, is it? Saturday week?
Yes, Saturday week, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're going to Doha?
I am indeed, Rafael? Going to Doha, yes.
Well, that's interesting, mm-hmm. Rafael. That's very interesting. Tottenham Hotspur against Sunderland. There you go. Now, that is an interesting game.
It is an interesting game. The Darren Bent angle is the obvious one. He was treated very shabbily by Ari Redknapp, sold on to Sunderland, and he'll obviously be hoping to go back there and score lots of goals.
But they've got a rotten record on the road, haven't they, Sunderland?
Yeah, they beat Liverpool and then lost their next two.
Right.
And Kenwyn Jones has started first of a 3-match ban because he got sent off against West Ham last week. But Tottenham, they're not much good. Can't see them maintaining their current lofty position in the table and be hopeful of a win for Sunderland. But then I would say that.
They've just had defeats against Arsenal and Stoke. Do you think they're going to bounce back from that, Rafael Paolo?
I quite like Sunderland this season. I didn't expect to say that a while back, but they are one of the better teams in that sort of middle of nowhere kind of situation in the table. There's a lot of these teams around this year.
Why do they exist? Somebody on the pod once said about another regionally close.
Well, that was
club.
Middlesbrough, and I still maintain there's no place for them.
I would say to me, Sunderland look like the best of the rest, if you exclude sort of
Stoke. Better
than Stoke.
Sunderland better than Stoke.
So basically, you're saying Sunderland are the best of the rest, apart from a couple of the rest.
Right.
Apart from the sort of pretenders to fourth spot.
Oh, I see. Apart from that group, then. Interesting. Stoke, meanwhile, are taking on Hull in what could be the final game of the Phil Brown era, of course.
Would be very sad.
Well, it would in some ways.
See him leave.
Yeah.
He's provided lots of entertainment.
He certainly has.
Nothing to do with the football, but he's been very good.
And they started off so brightly, didn't they? They've only won two of their five home games this season. Very brightly. Yes, indeed.
I kind of feel sorry for Phil Brown. I mean, he looks like a nervous wreck at the moment. And possibly, and this could be really patronising, possibly a break away from the game might do him some good, because I seriously start having concerns for his health and that he might actually crack up. But having to get a result against Stoke is not easy.
I think a walk across Humber Bridge to clear his mind might help.
Or get rid of the earpiece. No one ever got anywhere in football wearing headphones or anything like that. So there you go.
Do we know who's on the other end of that earpiece? Maybe he's just getting bad advice.
Oh, of his?
Yeah.
All right. I thought even mine would be equally appropriate. I don't know. Presumably he's got, people up top having a look at what's happening out on the field.
Hearing voices.
Mm. They're the very popular things. Of course, Big Sam did well with them, but I don't think anybody else ever has.
Sammy
I think
Lee
you just
did.
Lose so much respect from the players, do you? If you look like you've got somebody else telling you what to do, it just doesn't look like a manager.
Rubin's manager's done very well with a handful of beads. Maybe
that's true.
Phil Brown could expand.
Well, it's a similar vein to Trapattoni, of course, in his Aquasanta. Lovely. Very, very good. Listeners, viewers, thank you very much for being with us. I would bring in some more of your posts and stuff and tweets, but frankly, the technology's let us down on that front. Many, many thanks. Do post in during the weekend, and we'll be getting through to those on Monday when we'll be back, as God intended, Voices in the Darkness. In the meantime, though, many, many thanks to everybody involved here and to our very special guests on this historic Football Weekly Extra, Rafael Honigstein, Barry Glendening, and indeed Paolo Bandini. We'll see you on Monday. For now, though, from all of us here, it is arrivederci.
Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian in association with sportingbet.com.